Sundays and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The entire island of Puerto Rico is without power. CBS's Christian Benavides.
Puerto Rico is used to outages like this. They're still trying to investigate how this could have happened. Officials are working to get power back within the next few days.
A federal judge says he's found probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt of court for violating his orders to turn around deportee planes and could refer the matter for prosecution. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
They violated his order in mid-March when he said, do not deport those Venezuelans using the Alien Enemies Act.
President Trump meets with Japanese officials at the White House for tariff talks. Japan's prime minister now says trade talks with the U.S. won't be easy. CBS's Weijia Zhang.
President Trump has made clear that he is looking for deals if, in his words, they are phenomenal to the U.S., and certainly if they can reduce the trade deficit with certain countries, Japan being one of them.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
The Brewers win the series. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 5-1 win over the Tigers today in Milwaukee. A good performance by starter Jose Quintana. Last night, 24-year-old Quinn Priester tossed a shutout. Pat Murphy on the crew's scouting department.
You know, hats off to them for finding a guy in AAA that can come and give us two pretty good outings so far, and looks like he's a lot to work with and great kid and competitor, and seems like, once again, they strike again. Matt Arnold and his posse.
NBA, the Bucks holding practice, getting ready for Saturday's playoff game at noon against the Pacers. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers have lost their starting left tackle for the season due to a torn ACL, head coach Luke Fickell on tackle Kevin Haywood.
Obviously, I think he's going to have surgery, so it's probably going to lose him and probably not going to get him back, obviously, even for the season. So that was one that's going to be really difficult and tough. But, you know, it's also a part of the game.
That's the Badgers' Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hi, this is Beth, your new host for The Kitchen is Open, the award-winning show within the morning show. Each Monday morning at 9 a.m., we'll tackle topics, teach techniques, and tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners with insight on what it takes to make it in the food industry. Listen as I work with James, Seth, and others as we learn, laugh, and have fun. The Kitchen is Open. Same kitchen, new host.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about at the National Holocaust Museum. There is the Pastor Niemöller quote. First they came for the socialists and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I didn't speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me. And there was no one left to speak for me. This has found its home right here, right now, today. As we've been following this case of this trade unionist, this union apprentice, Mr. Garcia, who the Stephen Millers of the world call a gang member, MS-13. And refused to bring him back. We heard Donald Trump talk about the homegrowns. And the question is are you a homegrown? Because I look at the Pastor Niemöller quote, and, you know, what are we hearing today? It's the Marxist, it's the socialist, anyone who believes that we should have a better distribution of wealth, a safety net to ensure that people don't die on the streets, people don't freeze to death in their homes, people don't go hungry. You're the other, and you must be gotten. And then the trade unionists, people like me who believe that your work should be compensated with decent wages, health and retirement security, dignity, security at its core. Well, you know, on the list. And then the minorities, any minority now, anyone different. When they go through all that, are you next? So the question I come back to is, are you a homegrown? In this Donald Trump government, are you a homegrown? Because understand, you have no rights if they can end due process and habeas corpus. That you have zero rights if the rule of law means nothing and can be upended. And I look at the Trump administration losing at the Supreme Court 9-0. And yet, true to Trumpian form, claim a 9-0 victory. Look, if Trump and his Doge ferrets and the Stephen Millers and all these folks, if they can lock you up, if they can send any one of us to El Salvador or some other hellhole, are we still a democracy? Do we have anything? And you go, but Rick, that could never happen. The government admitted that Mr. Garcia was taken wrongly. It was a mistake. They did it in court. Now understand, as I've said all along, from all of the Russia stuff during the Trump term to all of the false claims of voter fraud, all of that, I believe what I hear in court. When lawyers put their hand on the Bible, when people put their hand on the Bible and swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help them God. And it's not God that they're afraid of. It's perjury. It's going to jail. It's losing their careers and their reputations, which is why they generally tell the truth. So when a government lawyer goes in and said, I don't know why we took him, I kind of buy that. I'm not listening to Stephen Miller on Fox News. Sorry. And the reason I bring this up is because, you know, this homegrown thing, this is serious. This for me is a total game changer. This is them admitting they're willing to go to the next level to get rid of any opposition, anyone who disagrees with them, anyone who has an alternative thought. As a labor guy, got to be honest, it's scary times because labor union members are generally the first to be gone after because they're empowered. They feel a sense of empowerment in the workplace. And if you can do that in the workplace, you sure as shine can do it to your government, that you have a constitutional right for redress of grievances. If none of that stands, what do we have? And now I look at this story at the NLRB. Reuters has reported that a whistleblower complaint addressed to Republican Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Tom Cotton and Democratic Senator Mark Warner by the group Whistleblower Aid alleges that Elon Musk, his little Doge ferrets, and the rest of them may be responsible for, quote, significant cyber breach. Likely of sensitive case files. What does that mean? That means they got a lot of information. They got a lot of information on organizers, on workers who are trying to organize. They got a lot of information, a lot of names, a lot of addresses, a lot of homegrowns, a lot of people who, you know, don't agree with the Trump government and want to try and make it better. And understand, this is one small little agency. But remember, you know, during the Hitler era, they came for the trade unionists. Why? Because they were the empowered. They were the ones who were most willing to speak up and unafraid because they were collectively together. Got to break that up in a fascistic society. You got to break that up when you've got an authoritarian leader with a fragile ego. You got to break that up. And is this part of it? Will we start seeing, and I said this on the show yesterday, will we start seeing, like in places like Colombia, trade unionists thrown out of planes or flown to El Salvador in the new prisons being potentially built? Is that our future? And my Red Hat union member friends who told me Donald Trump was going to be the greatest thing for organized labor, what you thinking now? Or is it only the acceptable union members? This is serious stuff. This is real. And the weird thing for me is I had someone ask me, do you think he really meant it? Do you think that was staged? No. I think they've been talking about this, and Donald Trump always has had diarrhea of the mouth. So it goes in his ears, people are saying it, right out his mouth. Because he wants to sound like he knows something. He wants to sound like he's in charge, like he's got a plan. Trust me, the Stephen Millers of this administration, they know what they want to do. This administration is deadly dangerous, unlike the last one. Because nobody thought he was going to win the last time. This one, all the true believers, all the people who have spent careers growing up in these right-wing think tanks, being paid enormous sums of money to dream up bad ideas, they now see it's game day. It's Super Bowl time. It's time to take all of those horrible things that they've been dreaming up and rubbing their hands over and salivating over. It's time to go. And it's time to inflict maximum damage on we the working people. Claw back every gain of the 20th century. And again, not just for workers, but for women's rights, for civil rights, for consumer rights, for rights. So I go back to where I started. If they can snatch you up and they can deport you and throw you out of this country and sell you into some hellhole prison that we're spending millions of dollars to help prop up, what right do you have? What rights do you have? When they come for you, who will speak up? That's my question. Want to hear your thoughts? Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bobby Kogan from the Center for American Progress is going to be here to share some thoughts on, well, you know, tax day was yesterday. And hey, guess what? Our billionaire friends, they did pretty well. We're going to talk about the Trump tax scheme and, well, what that's going to mean to you and me. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday was tax day all across America. And look, everyone I still think is feeling the sting. Maybe a little bit feeling the sting. Well, you know, maybe not everyone. You know, our billionaires, not so much thanks to Trump's 2017 tax handouts. And now I'm guessing maybe not feeling bad at all, because I'm guessing, well, they're feeling pretty good about the future, actually, because there's more billionaire welfare that could be doled out soon as Republicans are going about beating their masters. And the question is, what do these tax handouts mean for working people? Because it's not trickling down to you and me. And what does it mean when this kind of massive redistribution of wealth from workers to owners happens? What's it mean for working families? Here to share some thoughts on all of that and maybe talk about a tax code that maybe would work. I've asked Bobby Kogan to come talk with us. Bobby's the Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy there at the Center for American Progress. Bobby, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks so much for having me on.
So obviously, tax day yesterday, it's one of those days that we're trained like Pavlovian dogs to be angry at and foam over and be a little bunched up in the panties about. But, you know, you look at the numbers, our billionaire class, they can't be too upset.
Yeah, that's right. So we At various times in the U.S. history, we've had a tax code that's been better or worse. And I would say there were major changes that happened in the 80s, some good, some bad. And since then, our tax code has basically gotten worse and worse and worse. It's gotten less and less fair and more tilted towards the rich. And so obviously they still pay a lot of taxes. But what we've seen is something that kind of shifts costs away from them and onto the middle class.
Yeah, they pay a lot of taxes because they have the money. They have all the money. This is the weird part of this. There was a time, and I'm not so old that I don't remember a better distribution of wealth across all of the classes, but never in my lifetime has it been so unequal as it is now, to where we have this bloated billionaire class, and well, a working class that's struggling to make ends meet or just buy eggs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have a tax code that believes money should be taxed instead of people, right? If you earn money, then you pay taxes on that. And so to the extent that we have an ever-increasing inequality that goes more and more to the rich, obviously they're paying a higher share of the taxes, but it speaks nothing about how much they're paying. And so what we've seen kind of over my lifetime and before then is one that does more and more and more tax cuts for the rich. And what we're looking at now is something that would lock in some of the temporary tax cuts for the rich that we saw in 2017 and maybe even go beyond, depending, we're going to have to see some of the stuff that they haven't really gotten into under the hood, but, you know, we'll have to see. But regardless, what we see is additional tax cuts for the rich.
And this is where I got to give Donald Trump some credit and the Republicans of 2017. I've got to give them a little credit because they didn't insult our intelligence. I don't remember the argument. Maybe you'll correct me because clearly you're the expert here, but I don't remember them going, we're giving these tax cuts to rich people and then it will, you know the phrase, what is it? It'll trickle down. I don't remember the trickle down argument. They were very clear. Yeah, we're giving rich people tax cuts.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, they went through a million different, 2017 was, I mean, they were changing the whole way that they messaged everything. And what they said at the time was these tax cuts were actually, they'll just raise revenue. And they've come from it. They said, we're going to give tax cuts to the rich. They didn't even say it's going to trickle down. They just said, it's going to work. Everything's going to be great. And we'll have a much better tax code. They said, we had to get the economy going, even though they were actually left with a pretty strong economy.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, never mind any of that. And if you look at actually all the data, it shows that growth didn't pick up at all. They were just kind of giant tax cuts for the rich that deprived the Treasury of a lot of money. Right. And when I say giant, like what we're talking about here is that many of them are set to expire. They did a temporary tax cut for reasons that I can get into if it matters. But what they're looking at is it's about $250,000, actually more than that, for the average 0.1 percenter. Right. So way, way, way more for the people at the top than for anyone else. And in fact, 80% of Americans wouldn't see any change at all. And 14 million Americans see their taxes go up. Right. What they basically did was they wrote something that gives giant tax cuts to the rich, a little bit to the average person. And plenty of people get nothing or even are worse off.
Yeah. And the question then becomes, you know, when you look at this, you know, how is this going to affect working families? Now, we're told that the tax cuts, this has been the messaging all along. It's going to trickle down. It's going to make your life better because rich people are smart. They know what to do with the money and they're going to use it in the best way possible. I guess I should ask this in a better question. Have we gotten past that bunch of malarkey, to use a Biden term? Have we gotten past that already that we realize, no, rich people are smart. They know what to do with the money. They make themselves richer. It's not about helping you or me or society or anyone. It's about them. And from there, can we start talking about what the best way to use our tax dollars and what we invest in?
You know, I would say being shameless is a superpower. So some of these folks are totally shameless and willing to say whatever. Trump is out there still saying that somehow it passed on 4K of real wealth to individuals, which isn't what we saw. And instead, you know, we just have the tax cuts themselves, right? What we saw was growth that kind of continued at trend. The Congressional Research Service, they are a nonpartisan research, a bunch of nerds who work for Congress and they answer questions for them. They just put out a report last week saying We didn't really see any economic growth from, you know, from the Trump tax cuts. So that means what they did was just gave giant tax cuts to the rich, a pittance to other folks, and giant tax cuts to the rich.
Yeah, but Bobby, those people worked for Joe Biden once. You can't trust a thing they say.
That's true. They are nerds. So how could we trust them? It's actually to this point, you know, while we're talking about CRS, one of the old CRS workers put out something, I want to say in 2014, where he looked at tax cuts over the last many, many, many decades and looked at what the economic impact of lowering the top marginal tax rate was. And he found there was no impact at all. And Mitch McConnell made him pull the report. He, of course, resigned in protest because, you know, what's the point if they can make you pull your report?
Yeah, if they can censor
you. Early days of censor. Yeah,
sure. I mean, if they can censor you, why be there? But, you know, isn't that what we should already all know? I mean, isn't that kind of like common sense? I'm going to give one guy all of the cookies and he's not going to share them because there's no reason for him to have to. So yeah. I had a friend who said, "Look, you give a rich guy a tax cut, he's gonna go on vacation. You give a small business owner a tax cut, he's gonna maybe hire some new employees. He's gonna maybe invest in his business. You give money to workers, they're gonna go buy the toaster. There's a way to do tax cuts that actually does generate economic activity, and then there's the way we've been doing it."
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what we've had is a system that pretends that helping the rich do what they already want to do is great for everyone. And it's actually funny that you should say this, because the Congressional Budget Office, another group of nerds who, you know, I'm sure Republicans won't trust them either, but another group of nerds, the Congressional Budget Office, which does budget and economic analysis for Congress, looked at what the long-term economic impact of extending these tax cuts would do. And they found that instead of making the economy better, they said that it would make the economy worse. And so much worse. And this is kind of the craziest takeaway. They said it would make it so much worse that it would completely swamp the pittance of tax cut that most families would get. That in the long run, most Americans, not the rich, but most Americans end up worse off, not better off, even with kind of a small tax cut, because the economy is so much worse, your wages are worse.
Okay, so walk me through some of this, because the argument is wages are going to go down. I would argue that's because of a lack of bargaining power. If we had stronger unions, if we had laws that encourage more collective bargaining, I think that would take care of itself. But you know, so you're saying that even if we got a small tax cut and we got a marginal increase in wages, as we've been seeing, that life would still be worse. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So they said that the net impact of doing this tax policy would end up lowering investment and lowering U.S. productivity. And so over the long run, if wages were growing at maybe, you know, if they were going to grow at maybe this rate, they would grow at a slightly smaller rate. And so over time, that builds up. If I'm just going to make up numbers, but if on average you were going to get a 1% real raise over time, but instead of that you only get a 0.9% raise, you know, each year over time you end up behind,
right?
Because your wages just didn't grow the way that they were supposed to, because the economy did less good investment, because we had a weak, you know, kind of a weaker overall labor market, you have less bargaining power. All these things feed into each other, and they end up with worse wages. And that's what the nonpartisan nerds said that the Trump tax cuts would do to people over time.
Well, here's
not the rich. Again, not the rich.
No, but here's the thing, Bobby. What you just laid out has been the story of my life. The reality is this truck driver started working in the late 80s when union density in the LTL trucking industry was 85%. It's down to about 8% now. We've lost a lot of bargaining power. And back then, wages were, you know, in today's dollars, significantly higher. In fact, there was a report that I just looked at, you know, a couple of weeks ago that said, you know, back in the 80s, a truck driver was making $110,000 in today's money. Today, they're making about $55,000. So there has been a massive, I go back to this phrase, a massive redistribution of wealth from the people who work to the people who own. And a tax code that hasn't punished that kind of redistribution of wealth. So, of course, they're going to want more and they're going to demand more. The insatiable appetite for more doesn't end with our greed class.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, their proposed bill does that on steroids. So not only in the tax code are they trying to kind of redistribute, they also want to do spending cuts that would, you know, triple, quadruple down on this. So they want to do tax cuts for the rich, and they want to partly offset that with enormous cuts to Medicaid and enormous cuts to food assistance. Still, as they say, still partly, it still adds trillions of dollars to the debt. But so what we see, therefore, is giant tax cuts for the rich, declining real take-home pay for basically the bottom 99%. And then on top of that, taking away people's food assistance and taking away people's Medicaid. And that's before you get to the tariffs, right? Like before you do that, just the legislative action basically leaves almost everyone worse off and leaves the rich better off. And then you get to the tariffs, which, like, you know, are another $4,000, $5,000 of consumer loss on the average household. So really people are coming out many thousands of dollars behind. Pretty wild that they could, you know, that this could be. And it's not just me saying this. I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but Paul Ryan's former tax dude, this guy named George Callis, who worked for Ryan for a long time and was his head tax policy person and wrote most of the first, the Trump tax cuts 1.0. He wrote most of that bill. He said the swap of doing, you know, these tax cuts for tariffs would be a giant tax increase on the middle and working class and a giant tax cuts for the rich. Paul Ryan's dude says that, so you know it's got to be bad.
Yeah, no, it's bad just coming from him to begin with. It that would be bad enough, but this goes even further. So what do you then say when you add all this together, and on top of you know Doge Boy and his ferrets and their want to gut $1 trillion in government spending, you know, pulling that kind of activity out of the economy, what does that leave us down the road?
Yeah, I mean, the Doge boys are interesting. Elon Musk has now walked back. He initially said we're going to do $2 trillion. Then he said we're going to do $1 trillion. He's now walked it back to $150 billion eventually, maybe next year. But if they had succeeded, and, you know, if they were really doing a trillion a year, $2 trillion a year, that would be an immediate 5 to 10% of GDP economic contraction. That is like depression level. Like actual depression effect. I mean, and that's why I always said, you know, I was like, well, the data, you know, so who knows about some of the data and reporting, but we'll know if this is actually happening because we'll be entering an enormous depression.
Right. So the question is, for me, is why isn't the messaging on this that government actually spends money pretty resourcefully? That, yeah, there's some things that you may not be thrilled with, but you didn't find what you were looking for. And if you were to pull it out, it would be an economic calamity. Why isn't that part of the messaging?
Yeah, you know, and it's great you mentioned that because, you know, with tax day yesterday, you know, I always like to remind people, what is it the government actually does? And over, so 71% of the money that we do is payments to individuals. It's either directly or indirectly to individuals. That's your Medicare. That's your Social Security. That's your nutrition assistance. That's some of the education that happens, right? This is money to people in either direct cash or cash-like things to help everything work. And of the remaining 29%, about half of it is the military, but the other half is investments in the future. It's like our transportation infrastructure. It's our biomedical and other R&D. And then it's also the people who quite literally run the government, like without whom nothing actually happens. So you are definitionally, if you're trying to take away stuff, you're almost definitely you're taking away money that actually goes to people. And if it's in that other group, not counting the defense part, if you're doing the non-defense stuff, because obviously Republicans don't want to cut defense, they actually want to increase defense. If you're doing all this kind of non-defense stuff, you are guaranteed to either be coming from people or stuff that is investments in the future or the people who actually make the thing run.
And I would argue Republicans would be happy destroying all of the above. And
that's
not for you to join in the middle of. That's just my view, because this is what they've told us time and time again. In fact, wrote a big book on it. And they're that Project 2025 just seems to be more and more the playbook that they swore they weren't going to go by.
Yeah, I mean, that is what the Doge activities are, right? So at HHS, they fired all the people who run this program called LIHEAP. So there's this program called LIHEAP, Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, I think it stands for.
Yep.
And basically, we We help very poor families heat their homes in the winter so they don't freeze to death. And then we do a little bit of cooling your homes in the summer, especially for, you know, the very warm states. It is literally making sure that people are not freezing to death. And they fired all the people who run the program. So they didn't technically get rid of the funding for the program. And fortunately, the winter months are basically over. But you can't run the program if you got rid of all the people. So directly to your point, they have a vision of America that basically thinks the government doesn't do anything useful. And that is profoundly incorrect.
Yeah, no, they're going to destroy what's left of the 20th century and the social safety net that my grandparents' generation built to ensure that nobody falls below the poverty line too far. And this is, they romanticize the last Gilded Age from the 1870s, 1880s, and they want to take us right back. But Bobby, I appreciate the thoughts. I appreciate the work you guys do. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Bobby Kogan, Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy there at the Center for American Progress. It's kind of scary. If you put the dots together and line them all up, kind of scary where they want to take us, isn't it? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-30s. Then increasing clouds for tomorrow with showers and thunderstorms developing. Breezy with a high in the low 60s. Still some areas of rain and thunder around Friday. Mostly cloudy and a high around 60. Right now it's 48.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom. Only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about this Kilmer Abrego Garcia, who I fear, and as I've had a number of people say, I fear he's probably not even alive anymore because this has become such a political football. But I'll tell you, I'm proud of a number of labor leaders and union members across this country who have been out protesting and demanding this Trump government return their union brother back to this country, especially since our courts said so. This is the weird part of all this. But here to share some thoughts on this situation and where it leaves the rest of us, I've asked one of those labor leaders who have taken to the streets and have been on the right side of this to come share some thoughts. Jim Williams Jr. is the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org, their website. Jimmy, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. I wish it was under, better circumstances, obviously, or better days, but thank you.
Absolutely. You know, what do we know about this? Because, the Trump charade the other day was, oh, this is a gang member. He's MS-13. They're painting this picture of this horrible thug who's going to rape and pillage your children. Even though in court, the government admitted, oops.
Yeah, they got nothing. And, he's a father. He's an apprentice. He's a union member. He's a husband, he's a neighbor, and he's not one of the people that, Trump has demonized to say came here the wrong way or illegally. They made a mistake. They screwed up. And he was put on a plane down to El Salvador and thrown into one of the harshest prisons on the planet. And they admitted to screwing it up in court and won't do anything to return him. They're defying the Supreme Court's order. It was a charade to have El Salvador's president sit there and say he's not going to do nothing about it either. He's another, right-wing dictator, wannabe dictator, authoritarian. Then, not good.
No, I mean, the message of this for average everyday citizens who may not be union members, this is We're rubbing elbows and kissing up to authoritarian dictators, because I'd argue we're on our way to getting one ourselves.
We're there. With acts like this, when you're defying the Supreme Court's orders and openly gaslighting the situation and basically saying you're not going to do anything about it. I mean, I was there on this at the courthouse in Maryland when they got the favorable decision to have them returned, and to see the joy on the face of the family and the community that came to support them. It's like, you know, to have that deflated by the President of the United States and knowing that nothing's going to be done from his office is scary.
Yeah, I fear he never sees U.S. soil again in defiance of the court, even though the charade with Steve Miller and the president was they won. They won 9-0, which is, you know, kind of the most Trumpian thing ever. You get whipped in court and then you just come out and declare victory and the minions seem to fall in line. I do have a question, though. You know, do we know the terms of the contract with our government and the El Salvadorian, you know, prisons? Do we know how much is being spent? Do we know who allocated this money? Do we know where the funds are coming for? Any of this?
I don't think we know any of it. And it's just like the false claims about what DOJ has done, you know, and all the people that they found on Social Security that were 120 years old. And then, you know, we haven't seen a damn piece of evidence yet from the administration about any of their claims. And what's worse is when the President of the United States tells the El Salvadorian president, you know, get ready to build five more, because I think we're going to send down some homegrowns. What are that? People like you and I, Rick, who've spoken out against the administration. It's scary.
No, that was my next question to you. You know, are you one of those homegrowns? Is what you do advocating for workers and especially immigrant workers, does this put you on that list?
Yeah, it sure seems like it. And, you know, same thing with law firms, executive orders, you know, saying to go after law firms that all they're doing is, you know, trying to balance out the system. You know, honestly, and I know it's one of these things that we're not going to see happen, but the direct defiance to the Supreme Court's orders, you know, to me is yet another Donald Trump move that's grounds for impeachment. But you're not going to see that, not with the Republican controlled legislature the way it is. But, you know, we're quickly going into the rule of law is now really becoming questionable.
Now, this has to become a major issue in 2026 in order to take back the House. Because, look, at the end of the day, if they're going to defy a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling to bring somebody back here that they admitted they wrongfully deported, what does that mean for the rest of us? If they're not going to obey the rule of law, what does it mean for we the people? What does it mean for us if they don't? They don't abide by due process or habeas corpus or any of that. Do we then have any rights whatsoever if those basic ones aren't being upheld?
Yeah, I don't know how anybody could sit here and feel confident that those rights do, you know, carry on into the future without organizing and mobilizing opposition to win back, you know, some of the guardrails. And then even then, we have to question whether or not this president is going to even, you know, fall in line if there was the legislature controlled by Democrats. And quite frankly, we got to question whether or not Democrats are ready to really challenge what this president's doing. And, you know, we are running down a slippery, slippery slope when it comes to our country right now. And if people aren't, you know, fed up with that, or if people aren't, you know, a little concerned about what the future looks like for their children and for our communities, you know, I don't know what to say other than, you might want to check the facts on these.
Now, what the charade that Stephen Miller and Donald Trump played in that's gotten so much play and been sent to me so many times is that this Kilmar Abrego Garcia is an MS-13 member. Do we know if that's anywhere close to reality? Do we know that if he was some big gangbanger or big, you know, big time drug dealing criminal? Do we know any of that?
I mean, Rick, you can say whatever you want in Donald Trump's White House these days. There is absolutely zero proof on any level that any of that's true. The administration admitted in court that they wrongfully, because he's never been held for a crime, convicted of a crime in the country. You know, he escaped El Salvador where, you know, the gangs in El Salvador have him on a list for, you know, potentially somebody that they were targeting. I mean, this is crazy stuff from this administration to just turn it around on somebody who was just trying to feed his family, you know, better their life. And you know, quite frankly, my union brother. And this is just the lengths that this administration will go to just make claims. You know, that's just like saying, like they have, that if you're a federal employee, you're a threat to national security if you want collective bargaining. I mean, you could just say whatever the hell you want right now.
So much for give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That's a statement of the past.
For sure. For sure. And you can't, and listen, that's not just a statement of the past. It's you can't even say anything in opposition to this administration. You know, the other cases of people here on student visas that are being removed just for speaking out, man, it's gotten so off the rails.
And remember,
it's still
these are
less
the people,
than 100 days. It's yeah, less than 100 days.
Remember, these are the people who talk about free speech.
Yep.
So I'm sure you've seen the story of the whistleblower group who filed a complaint with a Republican Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Tom Cotton, the group Whistleblower Aid, alleging that Doge Boy and his little ferrets may be responsible for a significant cybersecurity breach of the National Labor Relations Board, getting into what they are calling likely sensitive case files that have people who are doing organizing's names and all this information that isn't supposed to be made public. What do you make of this? Do you think this is part of that entire attack on, well, those trade unionists who they're coming for?
Yeah, and it's first I would say it's an attack on just all of the guardrails that our federal government has had in place over the years. I mean, first off, that sensitive data and that sensitive information is designed to be kept secret so that employers can't, you know, have repercussions against workers that are trying to organize their workplace. That's why those lists aren't made available when people file any sort of claims at the NLRB, right? So, I mean, it's just eats away at the very nature of the confidentiality that needs to be in place for workers to take action against their employers. So it just is disrespectful to the entire system. It's disrespectful to the National Labor Relations Act, which is the law of the land. It's disrespectful to workers' rights to organize. You know, when you release that type of sensitive data, you're now putting workers at risk for all sorts of repercussion, knowing damn well that we have an NLRB that's not going to be able to function into the future anyway to help support them. It's just yet another attempt to silence workers in this country.
See, now I see this all as a giant exercise in chilling future organizing, a giant exercise in quashing any outreach to build worker power and to really put fear into the hearts of people so they don't ask for too much, they don't demand too much, they stay quiet, pliable, and exploitable.
Yeah, Rick, I agree with you 1,000%. And I think that's the piece that what we're watching come out of the White House is things that corporate America has done to workers now for generations, but it's on hyper display. And it's also the one place where you used to have confidence in that the government could help protect you. But, you know, the attacks on immigrants is certainly designed to keep more workers from coming forward. I mean, you heard Donald Trump give an inch when he said, well, we may have to work with, you know, the farmers and we may have to work with the hotel industry on having a better way to keep workers here, right? That's an inch he gave because employers said, whoa, you're going too far, right? Listen, anytime you keep workers' voices down, it's all designed to keep wages down and working conditions down and take away worker power. You couple that with the attacks on the federal sector. You couple that with, you know, issues at the NLRB and dismantling the NLRB. It's all 100% designed to keep workers from taking power.
So I've seen another press release at the AFL-CIO that another lawsuit's been filed against what the Trump government is doing to dismantle any reporting. They went after NIOSH, they've gone after MSHA, they're going after OSHA, they're going after the NLRB. All of these institutions that have helped build what was once a very prosperous working class, they're dismantling. There are a lot of lawsuits. At what point aren't lawsuits enough? Because clearly if you're not going to admit to a 9-0 loss in the Supreme Court, does this matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lawsuits are necessary to at least help build the organizing that's needed, right? You know, you defy an order to replace or put back collective bargaining for federal employees. Now we can strike. Now we can organize. Now we can do something, right? I think it's all designed to help. Look, you can't not file lawsuits when that's your first recourse to try to stop him. And that has to be done. But it, you know, and I know, it's not going to be enough. He's not going to listen. He's not going to be in compliance with the orders. We need to organize in mass the workers that are affected by this so that we can walk our, you know, union brothers and sisters off the job and take action the way we need to take action. So I think these steps are critical steps into pushing back into the future, Rick. I think we have to continue down both paths. We can't expect that just a legal strategy is going to be enough in the face of what this administration thinks of decisions out of the Supreme Court or any lower circuit court. So we have to be prepared to take what the courts rule and use it as ways to organize workers to take action on their own.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because look, there are, the last election, the claim was there are a lot of Red Hat union members, a lot of your members, a lot of my Teamster brothers voting for Trump, and I would argue against their best interest. Does this play into their awakening? Does this matter? Are you hearing people going, I didn't think he was going to do this? Anything yet?
Yeah, well, you know what I heard like four or five times in the same week, just a week ago? I voted for this, but I didn't know what this was, right? And I've already seen, you know, a number of people go, well, wait a second, we voted for lower egg prices. We voted for lower gas prices. We voted for tax cuts for us, not for the rich. You know, we voted for somebody who was going to stand up for the working person in this country. That hasn't happened. There's been nothing. And I think once this president's plan to have the largest tax cut ever, you know, the tax cut on steroids, I think is yet another slap in the face to all the people that worked in, you know, as hard as they did to vote for him. I think, you know, these bridges that he is crossing are a bridge too far. And I think you're starting to see a break in the dam from the people that voted to support this type of effort.
So in your view, is this a great opportunity to organize those people back into some other political movement? Maybe that, I don't know, sane Republicans can get on board with, or maybe the Democratic Party finds a spine or finds its way towards a decent message. Do you think this is an opportunity?
I do. I do. I absolutely do. And I think there has to be room for, I think there has to be room for the labor movement, for working people to be independent of these political parties, find independents, find Republicans that really do want to do things to help the working class and really help rebuild the Democratic Party under a working class image, right? I think it's got to be all the above. Because listen, right now, nobody's going to speak out against Donald Trump in this Republican-controlled Washington, D.C. However, you start losing elections and you start losing your place within the Republican Party and within the establishment, game on, yeah. Right? And to me, that's how you build it.
Going to be an interesting year and a half as this continues, because it's going to get a lot worse. But Jimmy, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts. Good on you for standing up, speaking out, and showing up. Hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
Jimmy Williams Jr., president of the Painters Union. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You concerned? You worried? Are you a homegrown? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 2000. That was the beginning of a two-day rally in Washington, D.C. to protest the gathering of world leaders for the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, or what is known as the A16 Summit. The event was a continuation of the massive protests that disrupted the World Trade Organization's meeting the year before in Seattle, Washington. The common thread through these protests was a concern over how globalization of world markets hurts working people and the environment. Protesters included a wide range of people, including peace activists, environmental activists, anarchists, and union members. 2 days before the D.C. protest, organizers held an international forum on globalization at the Foundry Methodist Church. 2,000 people attended this teach-in to hear from activists around the globe. It's estimated that 50,000 people attended the D.C. rallies. One big theme for the rallies was bringing attention to the negative consequences that can occur when developing countries receive economic bailouts. The strings attached to these painful bailouts often usher in destructive privatization schemes and painful austerity measures that disproportionately fall on the backs of working people. The protesters in the U.S. Capitol were met by a large police security presence. The D.C. police were determined that the protesters would not interrupt the meetings like they had done in Seattle. More than 1,000 people were arrested. These protests, from Seattle to Washington, D.C., demonstrate a growing recognition of the devastating impact globalization has on the lives of regular people. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
First and foremost, every union member in this country should be on edge when they have gotten into the NLRB. And look, I'm sure anyone who's been organizing at Tesla or Starlink or Amazon, or who knows, maybe even Starbucks, anyone who has attempted an organizing campaign at any of Trump World's CEO class, you got to be on edge right now. You got to be wondering, are you now on that list? Are you now on a list, a target list? If only to get fired and lose your job, maybe blacklisted, maybe we're going back to that. Or this homegrowns, because we don't want active, engaged citizens anymore. We want compliance. We want sycophants. We want true believers. We want people who are going to wear the hat and the t-shirt and wave the flag and, oh, dear Donald, you're the greatest. They want people who are going to drink the Kool-Aid and dance the dance. And the rest of us, depending on where you are, be weary. And understand, this is meant as, I said it before, this is meant to act as a chilling effect. The dissent will not be tolerated. Free speech, which is what they claim to believe in, not so much. And look, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this judicial showdown. Because on Tuesday, you saw U.S. District Judge Paul Azenas, who said, look, I want documents. I want the receipts. I want to know what you did, why you did, how you did, where you did. I want it all. I want written explanations. And we'll see if they do it. Because understand, you know, Trump didn't just have the El Salvadorian president because in town because, you know, we're buds. No. He had him in because he's the cover. Because the El Salvadorian president says, well, what do you want me to do about it? So Trump has the cover of going, well, if he can't do anything, what can I do? Now, here's the sad reality. And this is where my concern is. I don't think Mr. Garcia ever sees, one, the light of day or U.S. soil again. And I fear, sadly, he's already been murdered. That's my belief. Because I've heard so many things and read so many things about these prisons. And yeah, MS-13 is in there. The gangs are in there. And as the story that I've heard is this is a guy who escaped El Salvador to get away from that, to come here to fight for a better life, to work hard, to get a skill. And the documents that they're using, from what I've been told and what I understand, is he was a guy who was looking for work at a Home Depot. And the police, whoever was rousting the people at the Home Depot, wrote down, well, you know, might be gang activity. Might be. Lazy police work. And look, you know, our government went into court and said, oops, sorry. So this man and his family are in this situation. And I would argue the entire labor movement. Because if it can happen to him, especially in the building trades, where overwhelmingly there are a large number of people who are here in temporary protected status. There are a number of people here who have emigrated here looking for work. You know, work that Americans don't want to do. And those are good jobs, too. It's going to be interesting to see what the administration does. Do they defy the rule of law? And is this a moment where Republicans say this is a bridge too far? Because understand, all of my gun nut friends for years were screaming, liberals are going to take our guns. And I kept saying, no, liberals aren't going to take your guns. If guns are ever taken in this country, it will be from an authoritarian right-wing figure like Trump, like conservatives. Because they don't want you to have guns either. So if you don't have the right to due process, you don't have the right to habeas corpus. If they outlaw collective bargaining and collective action, if they outlaw your freedom of speech to address your government for redress of grievances, if they do all that, what makes you think that beloved Second Amendment isn't on the list as well? Because look, they don't want the tree of liberty watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots any more than anyone on the left would. So all of your T-shirts that were aimed at the owning the libs, sadly, I do see at some point, if we don't stop this, being your undoing. I know, I'm crazy. This is a Trump government where he's unpredictable. Now, Ro Khanna, who we've had on the show a number of times over the years, he went after J.D. Vance on Tuesday and said, look, Vance is not only declared war on the courts, but on the universities. And it's no accident, Khanna says. As Stephen Kokin observed in his study of Stalin, strong men do not fear recessions or even failed wars as much as they fear the university. And what you're seeing is Trump going after the universities. And understand, higher education in this country is one of our biggest exports. Lots of people come here from around the world because we have the best higher education system, which evidently has to be destroyed. Remember, he loves the poorly educated. And the weird thing is, you know, I fell down a rabbit hole today. I spent time reading the Facebook comments on a popular right-wing bloviators page. And wow, the poorly educated were out in full force. And surprisingly, oddly enough, and surprisingly enough, it was the, I don't know if they're real people or bots or what, but the people posing as women were the most vicious of the poorly educated when asked, should we get rid of American citizens if they're not doing what we want them to do? And surprisingly, a lot of them, yeah, we should be allowed to get rid of whoever we want. Again, this isn't a liberal suggesting this. No liberal has ever said we deport conservatives. No, it's not what we believe in the Constitution. Now, these, again, same people who walked around with the pocket Constitution. I have friends who, they do this all the time to me. Constitution. Love my Constitution. Never read it, but they love it, or what they think is in it. And evidently now what the right-wing machine is now spewing is it's in the Constitution that you can deport people you don't like. If they're bad, you can strip their citizenship away and send them to a concentration camp in El Salvador. And there are Americans, people who went through the same schooling that I went through, who are okay with it. And not just okay with it, but promoting it. until it's them. And where I started, first they came for the socialists and I said nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists and I said nothing. Then they came for the Jews and I said nothing. And by the time they came for me, there was nobody to speak up for me because they were all gone. How much will we tolerate? How much of this government will we allow? How much of the Trump government are we going to take? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Trump administration appeals a ruling that finds probable cause for criminal contempt over last month's deportation flights.
The finding follows the administration's refusal to follow the judge's order to turn around the planes that were carrying Venezuelan migrants to a prison in El Salvador. While the White House plans to appeal, Loyola law professor Lori Levinson says this is just the beginning.
We are moving closer and very quickly to a real conflict between the courts and the administration.
The judge says the migrants did not receive due process. The White House says the president is protecting the country. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, The White House.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell, speaking here in Chicago, says tariffs could present challenging conditions.
Tariffs are highly likely to generate at least a temporary rise in inflation. The inflationary effects could also be more persistent.
He says for now, the Fed is taking a wait and